Here is That Which Is with John Roger. That Which Is presented by MSIA, the Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness, a movement dedicated to awakening the spiritual heart within each of us. John Roger is the founder and spiritual advisor of MSIA, the founder and president of the Institute for Individual and World Peace, founder of the Heartfelt Foundation, and other organizations dedicated to improving people's lives. John Roger is a best-selling author, and he has been teaching and conducting seminars for many years. Right after John Roger speaks, we'll tell you how you can obtain more information about MSIA.
So I know things are different here, but I've never found a difference. Not when we really get down to it. And the struggling and the travailing to philosophies that we're told, remember and don't forget. And it's not just the Hebrew tradition that does that. I still think it comes back to we must confront the words that trigger our consciousness into negativity and neutralize those words. I know it can't not be done by going into the past. I know it can be done right now. And in our family, there were words that we didn't use in mixed company. I would hear the women say it with women, not hear the men say it with men, but not across. I heard them swear at each other and say the words. And so I knew those were bad things. And if you want to hurt somebody and be bad, you say that. Then it was like, here we are polarizing our language. And so now we've got to be real careful what we say because it'll be used against you. And so you become so careful about what you say, you can't really say the expression of your beingness. And I know that if we can't express the beingness some way, we can't really get a hold of it because it gets lost in the thinking and the chatter of the mind. In groups like this, we sit and we talk back and forth and we say things, and a person came up to me, they said, this is absolutely a miracle. This is just absolutely a miracle. And I was going, what? Yeah. I'm looking at her, but what? She said, I sit up there and I talk for 20 minutes and nobody interrupted me. She said, and that person sit and listened for 20 minutes and listened. I said, how'd you know that? She said, when she started talking, she started referring back to some of the things that I said that remembered things inside of her, and I sit and listen. She said, do you know that's a miracle? And I said, no, I really didn't. But I get that it is for a whole lot of people who've never been listened to and who've never had a chance to say what it is. And yeah, they were getting lots of levels of enlightenment as they would say things, and it was okay to say, and it was being said. And I think that those type of things are what we're dealing with and going towards. There should be that place inside of you where you have a safe place for whatever is said to you by anybody, where you can just take and put it in that safe place. And if you don't like it later, you just dump it. Then you put the safe place back. And I used to tell people, if you're not sure, if you're communicating, ask the person, do you have a safe place right now for me to talk to you? If they say no, not now, then don't say that right now. And say, can you tell me when you get a safe place? And then in minutes they may say, yeah, I have a safe place for you. You can talk to me. And they would say what was on their heart's place, and the person usually would say, well, they didn't need a safe place. They could have said that to me. And I said, not really, because you might have fired in the other one. But now this one, you're set to listen. And you're set just to listen, not to react. And I'm looking back at what I might have done had I known this 20 years earlier. I would have done a lot of things in a much neater, swifter, nicer way. And it's called, yeah, and life's like that. But what do we do from this moment is the big key in all of our existences. No one's going to be able to change what you did or didn't do, but you can take control of what you do next and the depth that you care to go with yourself. And that's entirely up to you. That might be the bad news, because if I were back in China and we were doing Buddhist readings of the Buddhic texts and we're eating, if I see you getting interested in your food, I whack you with a big club. Because you're supposed to pay attention to what I'm reading to you. If we were doing that type of discipline, there's a good chance you might go a little faster in eating or something else. But I don't know is that you would gain the self-discipline that's necessary to be by yourself and go into yourself and lift up in yourself. And in here, I think we really got a good way of doing it called, you get to see how disciplined you are and where you have to go, and it may be very disheartening to you, and it may be really wonderful for you. And all that's yours because that's what you've done, and I'm not going to take it away from anybody. Certainly set up opportunities to participate. But I would chance looking in the mirror and just saying the word Christ many times. I've had people in the room say the word rope many times. When they get through, some are just on the floor laughing like, rope, what's rope, rope, what? I mean, the word has absolutely no meaning. But I know also that's how you brainwash people, is to take meaning off words. So I tell people, well, what does that mean to you? Because I can discuss it in the context of their meaning. But also know that some of the words should be brainwashed out so that we can't use it on them. See, when I grew up, and I can go through the races because I lived in the potpourri of just all the different races going into these mines and working. God, nobody knew what my name was. They just knew what my nationality was. My grandfather always called me kid. I thought it was pretty neat until every kid would come in and goes, hi, kid, hi, kid, hi, kid. I realized my grandfather doesn't know me. Well, he didn't know my name, but he knew me. Because if I did something, he knew which kid to get after. But I'm still saying we've come a long way, and we've got a long way yet to go. And we're coming to the place where we're saying, when are we all going to stop taking umbrage with the name that somebody calls us, rightfully or wrongfully, as being anything than just something that passed through the air and my ears vibrated to it, and go into the heart of yourself and listen from that place? That's the ultimate destiny. All the religions that I've studied, and that doesn't mean all the minor ones, because there are some minor ones, they've all come back to the heart place or the seat of sacredness. But they're all different words in the same place. And I sit down and I go, I'm not in any disagreement with what they do. I might disagree with how they're going about it. Why? Well, because I don't want to run 50 miles out there and 50 miles back to do it, and I disagree with that. I'll just sit here, you run, when you come back, we'll do it. But they'd say, no, you have to suffer this with us. And I go, fine, I'm going to another group that doesn't like to suffer that. And I grew up in the Roman Catholic Church also. And the first time I did that, I got worked out. I said, if they rang that bell one more time, I was going to get up and sing Silver Bells. And my friend, who was a good Roman Catholic, kicked me right in the ass. He said, no, you wouldn't. I deserved the kick in the butt. It was a smart, clever, throwaway remark of, I had a good time in there. I asked him to take me again, because he said he'd never take me again. He didn't tell me, he told somebody else. So I asked him, hey, can you take me down to Novena? You want to go? Yeah. He says, no remarks. I go, no, I may make remarks. That's my privilege of being your friend. He said, come on. Well, see, when you grow up with those understandings, and those were guidelines and ground rules, but man, I couldn't call him a mackerel snapper. He eat fish on Fridays. He would just, see, these are things that I grew up, and I can go down and just rip them off left and right if I could remember them all. But it's okay for him to say that to one of his friends. And sometimes it's like, I think Alexander the Great sort of did it in a big way when he told some people they killed their king when he was overruled. And he said, only a king can kill a king. And he wiped out the entire population. And it's like, only a black person can call another black person a nigger. Only a Jew can call another person a Jew. Well, I remember one of my friends, and I have Welsh blood in me, he looked at me and I said, you just Jewed me down. He goes, yeah, but you're Welched on everything. And then all of a sudden we looked at each other and we started laughing. And it had nothing at all to do racially at all. It had to do with just the way the language was being used. And I don't think he and I could assault each other if we even sit down and made a point to, because that's not the place where it's going to reside with us. And I'm hoping we're all going to get to the, and I still have to work mine. I mean, somebody take my parking place Or they're part of the real, I call you road hog. Well, they're no longer a hog, that's not a road hog, but that's as fast as I can say it before they're gone. I know they can't possibly hear it. Even though I know they never heard that either. And so working on it and talking about it and put it in a broader perspective, I think is one of the best ways to approach these things, is to take it and depersonalize it, put it out, bring it back in when you personalize it in a way that it is functionally working for you. It's got to be a practical demonstration. That's my answer.
I know that loving is more loving is the answer. When I've been focusing on that, I have had more negativity and junk come up than before.
Well, what you're saying is I don't understand why that happens. Sometimes when we have a little thing to handle where the mind goes out, it doesn't take much inside to handle it. Sometimes just walking away handles it. Sometimes hanging up the phone handles it. Sometimes just saying shut up and walking away handles it. So when there's something big to be cleared, sometimes a shut up, nobody comes close to clearing it. And a walking away doesn't clear because it follows you and keeps right at you. I've found often at the moments of my greatest loving, this is not like now present, but in the past, the moments where I had my greatest loving is when the greatest negativity came up to be cleared, because I had the greatest amount of loving to clear it. And the less loving I had, the less karma came up to be cleared. So I used to think, God, this isn't fair. The more loving I am, the more shit I get. Until I caught on what was going on. Oh my God, I'm clearing it faster. And when I realized that the loving was clearing it, all I did was stay in the loving. And I didn't go out to it. I wouldn't let my mind go out to it. If it came in, fine. I never went seeking. I never checked to see if it was gone either. Because that would then pull me out of the balance of it. Well, what you've done is you're somehow going out to check. How are things going? And they slap you in the head and you go, fine, thank you very much. You go, God, that doesn't feel good. Well, once you're in the loving, it's as much effort to stay in the loving as it is to pull the mind back when it goes out. It's as much effort to stay in the loving as it is to get the mind after it's gone out to pull it back or to stop it from going out. They're equally strengtheners. So either way, you're going to be gaining strength. Somehow it was designed for us entirely, but not necessarily for how we feel about it or how we do it. But it's always been a strengthener. And if I get out, if I turn towards something that's negative to see where it is, it weakens me. But that's looking into the shadows. And so I always turn from the shadows very fast to see where the light's going. Often I've walked with the shadow in front of me because the light was behind me. But I want to see where that shadow went. And as soon as it went beyond where I could see, I turned around immediately and went back the other way. It seemed very easy because I knew the route. But it was just a fool's game. Because I knew that the way out and the way in were exactly the same way. If you go into the darkness, the way out was the way in. Reverse and come out. People think, oh my God, that's so long. It's like, no, you're in the light. As soon as you turn, you're in the light. It's just going to get brighter and brighter and brighter as you get further along to it. At some point, you may turn because it's too bright and start back down in the shadows again. So at some point we rest and we take it easy and we see where we are and we inventory how well we've been doing. And sometimes we go get drunk. Sometimes we go walk by the water to ground ourselves. Sometimes we go out and just play baseball or football, or we watch Monday football games even though we hate them, just to watch some earthly grounding things. Sometimes we watch boxing just to watch blood fly, even though we hate it. Just to go, God, there's earthly grounding things here. And sometimes we'll go to organizations and volunteer to be in them just to watch the inner workings of an organization. And then we start to move back into the light action again. Now, all of those are fine. I don't know anybody, and I know a lot, who've always just went straight down the narrow into the light. I know those who have made it all went off to the side to see what the straight and narrow was. And they all said, it's a straight and narrow path, but the only reason they knew that, because they went off the sides to see where it was. Well, I've been off the sides often. So when people go there, I go, yeah, I was there, I know what that is. It's not a bad thing. It's just if you keep going, you'll fall over. Why don't you just step back? A lot of people step back and go, I know where the path is. That's fine. I'm glad people pulled me back often. But it was always done in a loving way. Doesn't mean they didn't grab me forcefully and pull me back. But it was still done in a loving way. You know, years ago, I saw my father. I was working in the mine with him, near a mine with him, and a guy reached down and picked up something like a cable, and he started getting electrocuted. And we were this close, probably a little bit closer, and you know my instinct was to pull the guy away. And my dad pushed me with his foot or his hand, I don't know, but I sort of went flying backwards. And me picked up a board and hit that guy and knocked that guy 20 feet away and saved his life. And I said, why did you do that? He says, if you'd have touched him, you'd have got electrocuted too. He said, the way he had to hold the line, I knew it wasn't going to kill him. But I had to get him off there, both hands at the same time. The only way I could do that was to knock him in the chest off. And he let go. And I looked at that and I thought, God, my dad's smart. Then I found out later on that he was one of my dad's best friends and my dad really loved him. And he saved him. I loved him, but I wouldn't have saved him. I'd have killed him. My dad's way, as rough as it looked, was the best, most loving way. Then I woke up. There are a lot of ways to do things. And sometimes they look rough and bad. You don't know unless you know really what the repercussions could be.
What I really would like is to move through this world and move through my life with a real knowledge, living awareness that that presence is with me.
Well, there's 5 billion people doing the same thing, wanting to do all of what you're saying. So it isn't an unusual request. I don't think you're going to get it any more than anybody else does. You may think you want it more than anybody else, and I don't know if you do or not. Are you living in a nunnery? Where you're starving yourself and eating one meal a day and putting up with open, oozing sores. Well, some people are sacrificing a lot to try to make the point that they really are after that in a big way, and they're not getting it either, so apparently that way doesn't do it. Just because you really want what you want doesn't mean you're going to get it. I know the path is inward. I know that if you go to a church outward, down to a church, and you go in there and you sit down, you kneel down, you pray, you've done a lot of outward things, but when you get there, you're going inward. If you can go inward all the way you're walking down there to kneel and pray, and you're inward, you're farther along than the person who just waited till they got there to go inward. So we're talking about, how about getting up in the morning and start being aware of going inward and take times to notify yourself you're doing that, called spiritual exercise time, and the rest of the time, be loving, which means you've got to come inside to produce the loving to let it come out, and do things with more of that in your life, you've got to come inside to get that to make it go out. So in a sense, the word, there really is no outside there. There's just us putting things out there that we walk in or towards, either love or hatred or jealousy or envy or caring and sharing. But we come from this place inside first. And the quality in which you have it inside of you will be the quality by which you give it out. It may not be quantity, but it certainly will be quality. And if its quality is jagged on the inside, it'll have a jagged thing on the outside. And then you say, I misrepresented. And I go, no, you were represented accurately. You thought it was smooth, it was jagged. Now you're being shown it's jagged. Then you use the feedback from the universe to say, hey, that was a little jagged feeling out there, to come back in to go, where do I have to smooth this off? Oh, I get it. I thought they should just get it because inside I felt it. It doesn't work that way. I wished it would. Because then maybe you should get what they're getting because they're doing it, and you're not getting theirs either because everybody's doing their own inner thing and nobody's getting everybody's outer thing. So at some point, while you're loving, you also have to open up a thing that goes, and what are you doing over there? See, if I just sit here and I just stay loving and stay in my loving and don't move, and you walk up here with the pain, I can never know that. Because I don't have pain in my loving. If you have distress, I cannot know that because all I got's loving. So I've got my loving, but I also got a thing here lined up that when you have distress, it goes distress, distress, and I go, oh, okay. Well, I can approach a distress loving. So I don't make you more distressful. Or maybe I approach it some other way. Maybe I approach it with humor. Maybe I leave it alone, saying anything I do is going to make it worse. So do nothing. Don't even answer a question. Just say, thank you, I don't have an answer. Let them go. Some people say, well, that's not very loving. It's like, you don't know what it was or it wasn't. And why do you say that to that person? Because they're in that place where you tell them. Because if they get out of their business, your business, and get back to their own and leave it alone, then you go, thank you. And see, most of the time, if we all got back in our own business, there'd be a whole lot of thank yous going on along this planet. And I talk to a lot of, and I'm using these words judiciously, Christian ministers. I don't look at me as one. I look at me as a follower of Christ. And I also know that I fall short of that. Nevertheless, I'm still following. That doesn't mean I'm right next to him. There may be 10 billion in between us. So I'm on that path. But I do know that. Well, it's immaterial what I know. You cannot have the experience your sister has even if you eat the same food. And so let her have her experience and glorify and feel good that she feels glorified and feels good. And that's a real support system. I think that's a real caring system. Jesus is the head of this organization, spiritual head. I know when people found Jesus someplace else, because I ask him. I go, oh, no, they're caught up in a bunch of emotional flooding. You know, they want full-time pay for part-time devotion. In this group, he wants full-time devotion, and maybe you get some pay. It's not that he's a dictator, but he sure is totalitarian about it. Loving and caring and sharing and do these things. Don't think about these things. Do these things. And he lays down the law, and I follow the law, and I prosper. It just beats some people how I can have a great big mansion on top of the hill and have a vow of poverty. Since I don't own it, it's very easy. But you follow those things. There's the emotional quality of spirit that's very nice to have. The Mormons have a work ethic quality of spirit, which is very nice to have. The Catholics have a penitence and a forgiveness form of religion. They go and commit their sin and forgive themselves, pay the penance and go back out, and then they do it again, then they come back in, and finally the priest says, you might try to examine your life while you keep repeating that habit. And if you go to their schools, you do things wrong, you get your hand slapped. I can't say any of these things are right or wrong. I just know they're out there, and people are doing them. And I don't know if I'm pro-choice or pro-life, but I think I'm for both of them. And I'm not against anybody who says they're going to have an abortion for whatever reasons they have it. I don't know their karma. So I just sit there, and a person starts me, I just go blank on them. I'm like, you might as well talk to somebody who knows what you're talking about. I don't know. You want a soul transcend? Let's go. I know how to do that. You get up to God, you talk to him. Let him answer it for you. All I would do is do a lousy attempt at what I think. I know nobody can die until it's time. And I know God's got it wired. And that's why I never fight the devil. Because he's wired also. But I try to do everything I can to keep him someplace else. But the traveler consciousness in the higher realms is also the devil. Do you understand? God's in all things. It's a strange paradox. So at some point, if the devil walks in this room and people said, let's kill the devil, they go, stop. That's what he wants. Let's love him. That's what he can't take. So we would love him into conversion. How do we love him? Adoring him? Worshiping? No, we say, sit down, have a seat, see if you can learn something. Would we all give up and give him our seats? No, go out in the hall and get your own chair and bring it in. That's what we all did. We love him by treating him as an ordinary being like the rest of us. No fear of reverence or reverence and adoration. No more than anybody else in the room. But if you started getting a headache, we'd say, can I help you with it? He goes, yeah, could you put your hand back there and see if it'll help? You do, and it helps. He goes, gee, thanks. You go, gee, the devil says thanks. Well, he comes dressed as a gentleman. If he came spitting fire and brimstone, we might be aware. And even Jesus says he comes as an angel of light. So I don't know who these people are worshiping when they found Jesus. Because I know their spiritual deception. So don't go after what your sister wants. Get what yours is. If it's the same as hers, and it works, and you're uplifted, just wonderful, magnificent. And if it doesn't, have the wit to let it go. And if you're not having a continuing experience, then Jesus has abandoned you, or you have turned. The Jesus I know does neither one of those.
Beirush Bishan.
The blessings, the ideas, and the concepts which you've heard are just a small part of the abundance of material John Roger has shared with us over the years. If you would like a free book by John Roger, Journey of a Soul, call this number, 1-800-899-2665. You can send email to servicedesk@msia.org or write to That Which Is, Post Office Box 513-935, Los Angeles, California, zip code 90051-1935. This has been That Which Is with John Roger. Thanks for joining us.